She came from a very musical family. Everyone played an instrument, and her mother would always ask her, "Why don't you like music the way the other girls do?" A family friend who was a learning specialist tested her with pitches. DL was asked to stand up if a note was higher than another, or to sit down if it was lower. But this, too, failed. "I could not tell if one note was higher than the other," she said. DL was told as a little girl that her voice was monotonous when she recited poetry, and one teacher set herself to tutor her in inflections and intonations, to read dramatically. This apparently was successful, for I could not detect anything abnormal in her speech. Indeed, she now spoke warmly of Byron and Sir Walter Scott, and when I asked her to, she recited The Lay of the Last Minstrel with expression and feeling. She enjoyed poetry readings and going to the theatre. She had no difficulty recognizing people's voices, nor did she have difficulty recognizing all sorts of sounds around her. Water running, wind blowing, cars hooting, dogs barking. DL loved tap dancing as a girl, was very good at it, and could tap dance on skates. She said she was a street kid and liked to perform with other kids on the street. She seemed, therefore, to have a good sense of rhythm in her body and now likes rhythmic aerobics. But if there was a musical accompaniment, this would throw her off and interfere with her dancing. "When I tapped a simple rhythm with my pencil, like the opening of Beethoven's Fifth or a bit of Morse code, Mrs. L could easily imitate it. But if the rhythm was embedded in a complex melody, she had much more trouble, and the rhythm tended to be lost in the overall noisy confusion she heard." During junior high school, DL developed a liking for war songs. This was in the mid-1940s. "I recognize them because of their words," she said. "Anything with words is okay." Her father, newly encouraged, bought records of war songs. But, she remembered, "if an orchestra was in the background, it drove me crazy, like sounds coming from all different directions, overwhelming noise." People often ask Mrs. L what she hears when music is played. And she answers, "If you were in my kitchen and threw all the pots and pans on the floor, that's what I hear." Later, she said that she was very sensitive to high notes, and that if she went to an opera, it all sounded like screaming. "I couldn't recognize the Star-Spangled Banner," Mrs. L said. "I had to wait until others stood up." She also failed to recognize Happy Birthday to You, even though when she became a teacher, she would play a recording of it at least 30 times a year when any of my students had a birthday. When she was in college, a professor did some hearing tests on all of his students and told DL that she had impossible results. He wondered if she could, in fact, perceive music. Around this time, she started going out with boyfriends. "I went to all these musicals," she told me, "including Oklahoma. My father managed to cough up enough for a 90-cent seat." She would sit through these musicals. They were not too bad, she said, if only one person was singing, as long as it was not too high. She mentioned that when her mother had a stroke and was admitted to a nursing home, all sorts of activities, but especially music, delighted and calmed her. But Mrs. L said that if she were in the same position, music would make her worse, drive her mad. 7 or 8 years ago, Mrs. L saw an article in the New York Times about Isabel Peretz's work on amusia, and she said to her husband, "That's what I have." Although she had never thought of her problem as psychological or emotional, as her mother seemed to, she had not explicitly thought of it as neurological. Excitedly, she wrote to Peretz, and in her subsequent meeting with Peretz and Krista Hyde, she was reassured that the condition was real, not in her mind, and that others had it as well. She got in touch with other amusic people and feels that now, with a bona fide condition, she can excuse herself from going to musical events. She wishes that a diagnosis of amusia had been made when she was 7 rather than 70. This might have saved her from a lifetime of being bored or excruciated by concerts to which she went only out of politeness. In 2002, Ayotte, Peretz and Hyde published a paper, Congenital Amusia, a group study of adults afflicted with a music-specific disorder in the journal Brain, based on their investigation of 11 subjects. Most of them had normal perception of speech and environmental sounds, but the majority were profoundly impaired in recognizing melodies and in pitch discrimination, unable to distinguish between adjacent tones and semitones. Without these basic building blocks, there can be no sense of a tonal center or key, no sense of scale or melody or harmony, any more than, in a spoken language, one can have words without syllables.